This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. The NCAA announced today that it could not find evidence that UNC Chapel Hill violated academic rules in the use of fake classes. The verdict is tied to an investigation into whether student athletes benefited from so-called paper courses at UNC Chapel Hill. The fake classes lasted for nearly two decades. The NCAA ruled the courses were not meant only for student athletes, so the university didn't break any academic rules. Joining us now for more on that ruling is reporter Jason DeBruin. Hello, Jason.
Hi, Frank.
Break this down for us. Tell us about this justification now and the NCAA ruling.
It's really kind of cut and dry, and you actually said it. By the very narrow reading of the NCAA's bylaws, they said that they do not have jurisdiction over these so-called paper classes, these fake classes, because they weren't exclusively for student athletes. So because they were open to any student, chess club student, whoever, the NCAA ruled that they do not have purview over these classes. So while they found the sham classes despicable and were happy to criticize them on a conference call today, they ruled that because it was open to anybody, it's not the NCAA's purview.
I mean, this was a scandal for UNC Chapel Hill. It is academic fraud. It has been exposed and reported. And the members of the athletic department were steering their students into classes that were fraudulent.
That's right. And it's important to note that, it's important to note that the athletes were steered toward these classes. And although the classes were technically available to any student that wanted to get them, it's not like they were widely advertised. I mean, the percentage of student athletes that were in these classes was far higher than the percentage of, you know, the student athlete as a percentage of the body, student body. And so it's very easy to see how these were intended to be only for athletes, even though they were technically open to anybody.
And again, if your athletic department is steering them to classes you know are fraudulent, but apparently that, they said, was not within their purview. So this would not have been a violation, that you're taking somebody and saying, I know this is wrong, I'm going to send you there. But according to the NCAA, that's really not part of what they're looking at.
Again, because of the technicality that it is not exclusively for student athletes. You know, you could say the same thing about a chess club or whoever. They, you know, a chess star could have kept his or her eligibility higher by getting an A in one of these sham classes just as easily as a football player could.
So what was at stake here? What was the university facing?
Well, they were facing, you know, pretty stark sanctions, as significant as the death penalty, though that was very unlikely to happen. I don't think that'll ever happen again. But realistically, they were facing a vacation, you know, loss of wins. The championship banners would have had to come down. Scholarships would have had, would potentially have been taken away for years or longer. I mean, there were some very serious penalties that the football and or basketball team were potentially facing that just never materialized.
All right. So, and give us the scope of this investigation. How long had it been going on, and how deep did it go?
It's very long. So the investigation itself lasted for some 3.5 years. The report went through three different iterations before, you know, before today's release. By some reports, UNC spent $18 million in legal fees defending this. Darren Rovell, the sports economist, said that was money well spent today in sort of a sarcastic point. But I mean, nonetheless, $18 million is a lot of money.
A lot of money. So what is next? Is this the end of this investigation? Of course, this does not include the academic fraud. That was an entirely different probe, and that results was entirely different. But what's next now in terms of the athletic investigation? Is this over?
Yeah, I mean, that's it. You know, there was reason to believe that if the NCAA had come down hard on UNC, that they would have appealed it and actually taken it to court. But because there are essentially no penalties on the university, this pretty much is the end of this chapter.
Jason DeBruin, WUNC's data reporter, talking about the NCAA ruling today, UNC Chapel Hill finding no sanctions. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
Well, another cluttered week in North Carolina politics. Roy Cooper's administration says no to the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. Meanwhile, an effort to help fund the state's film industry gets a substantial lift. And federal judges say they may require an independent mapmaker for the state's ongoing redistricting dispute. Here to talk about those topics and other policy developments, WUNC Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff DeBerry. Welcome back, Jeff.
Hello, Frank.
Yesterday, a panel of three federal judges heard attorneys for state lawmakers and the plaintiffs about these new legislative maps. So tell us about that. What did they hear?
This panel, listeners will remember, more than a year ago, struck down maps that were drawn in 2011 for being illegal racial gerrymanders, ordered that the legislature redraw them, went through the appeals process. The legislators eventually redrew them, and now they're back before these three judges for a review. And what they heard was that the plaintiffs counter, these new maps are still illegal in several places. Cumberland County, where Fayetteville is, and Guilford County, where Greensboro is the county seat, and that they still illegally pack in black voters. This is just the extension of one of the redistricting conversations that is playing out, one of the court challenges that's playing out right now. And they were in court yesterday. We got an order from the judges late yesterday, about an hour after court had convened for the day, and in which the judges ask both sides to agree on three special masters, which are expert map drawers. They're asking the sides to agree on three different map drawers, special masters, by next week. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean this is going to go, or some of the districts are going to go to an independent entity to draw maps, but it certainly is signaling that it might go that way.
So in other words, if they find it, the judges say, no, these are no good too, they're already sort of making preparations for that. By the way, if we rule against you, you need to have somebody in place.
That is one path that this could take. It's a game of, and sort of, it's a game of hopscotch. They could send it back to the legislature yet again and say, hey, these maps, these, you know, X number of seats in Guilford County, I believe there are six House seats contained within Guilford County and three or four seats within Cumberland County, they're still racial gerrymanders, and now we're giving you a third opportunity to redraw them. Or perhaps they'll say, we're not giving you another opportunity. Or perhaps they'll say, you know what, these maps are okay. Carry on.
All of this against the backdrop of a U.S. Supreme Court decision impending, pending court decision on the Wisconsin political gerrymandering case, and there's a political gerrymandering case in the courts in Greensboro.
Right. Racial gerrymandering, illegal. Partisan gerrymandering, for now, legal, allowed. There is a challenge to, and we have been for the past couple moments talking about state legislative maps. There is a partisan challenge to congressional maps in North Carolina. The folks that sued here say that the maps drawn last year are in violation of the First and 14th Amendments from the U.S. Constitution. First Amendment, of course, and the 14th is the Equal Protection Clause. So that trial starts in Greensboro next week. The most litigated state when it comes to redistricting.
Well,
your home.
Let's talk about some news on the administrative front now. Governor Roy Cooper issues another veto, his 13th since taking office. The bill he halted now has a range of elections provisions. Talk about what's at stake here.
Yeah, this emerged. This was proposed as a way to ease restrictions, ease ballot access for third-party groups, make it easier for unaffiliated voters to get on the ballot for races, not General Assembly races, but other races. And this was something that had a lot of support across the aisle, both parties. There was a House version, a Senate version, differed slightly. They went into conference, which is a closed-door negotiation. They hashed it out. It emerged. And when it emerged, there was a provision within this bill that has nothing to do with ballot access. It has to do with judicial primaries, and it eliminates judicial primaries in 2018. So what the legislature did here, in a bit of a political maneuver that they've done plenty of the last 9 months, is they almost dared Cooper to veto this. Indeed, he did veto it, and he says that he, the governor, cannot support getting rid of judicial primaries. He says that this is the precursor to going in a direction of not letting the people decide judges in the state, but allowing the legislature to appoint judges. So he vetoed it. We should note that he supported a measure similar to this 22 years ago when he was in the North Carolina Senate.
So, and the Democrats were in control.
And when the Democrats were in control. So he's getting hammered for that about face, if you will. And he's also taking some criticism for vetoing a bill that would make it easier for the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, to have candidates more readily available on the ballot.
Also, the State Department of Environmental Quality rejected a plan for the Atlantic Coast Pipeline this week. Tell us about it.
Yeah, DEQ kicked back the plan to Duke and Dominion. They say that what has been laid out is the framework for this $5 billion project that would carry fracked natural gas from West Virginia through Virginia into North Carolina and potentially someday down to South Carolina. Just doesn't meet the qualifications for environmental preparedness in terms of erosion and sediment damage. So they have said no, like this isn't good enough. take another shot at us and tell us how you're going to mitigate and deal with these factors. And it's worth noting because no other executive administration, no other entity at this point has pushed back against the pipeline. We are going to get a ruling from, or expecting to get a ruling from, a federal panel later this month on whether or not they will green light this pipeline. But this is the first significant roadblock for the Atlantic Coast Pipeline.
All right. I want to talk about a measure that the governor signed into law that opens the door for more TV and film incentives in the state.
Yeah. So Cooper, this bill, supported by a Republican-led legislature and backed by the governor, so it's a bipartisan issue in part, that extends the deadline for a film grant. And what this does is it opens the door for about $30 million to be available for a production company to lure television and film productions to the state next year. But while this is supported by some on the right and the left, this is also not supported by some on the right and the left. They say that they are handpicking an industry, that this isn't something that the government needs to be doing. The government doesn't need to say this industry and that business and so on and so forth get these funds. But this, the film incentive, film tax incentive, film grant debate has carried on for several years because back in 2014, lawmakers ended a tax incentive that they said had just gotten out of control and too much money was being lost in terms of potential tax revenue. And what happened as a result of that is that the state went from spending $80 million or allocating, whatever word you want to use, $80 million down to $10 million year over year to the film industry. And there were a lot of productions that left for Georgia. And there are many folks in Wilmington and other areas of the state who have said this has had a real profound impact.
So now
on
this
them.
Would bring it back up to about $30
million. So
yes. Getting a little close to what you had before. Capital Bureau Chief Jeff Tabiri, thank you so much.
Always a treat.
Just ahead, a lifelong educator who says we need to revolutionize higher education. We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.